Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. This is your host, Rick Stevens, and folks, remember that this is your show. Folks, if you've got questions you would like to have answered, if there is a topic you would like to hear on a future episode of Money Matters, please feel free to reach out. Give me that call at 719-500-8700. You can send me an email or stevens@frsfinancialgroup.com or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com, click that contact tab in the top right corner, send us that question, that topic you'd like to hear more about. We would love to hear from you. Folks, this week on Money Matters, I am joined by my co-host, Dan Cashel. Dan, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great. Spring is right around the corner, and hail's right around the corner. Can you believe how fast the year's gone by so far?
But I swear I blinked, because yesterday it was January. But winter's coming back, though. Winter's coming back.
Well, I mean,
by the time this hits the air,
it's not.
We should have like 2 feet of snow
exactly
under us, right?
Starting to melt.
Some crazy stuff in there. But yes, hail season is also around the corner, not too far. Mm-hmm. And folks, that is why we have the man who knows, I don't know if I can put all of it about
everything,
the insurance world, but it's going to be pretty close. Dave Brukeva with Bruckhouse Insurance with us this week. Dave, welcome back to Money Matters.
Thanks for having me back.
Nice to see you.
Awesome. And folks, as always, we have to satisfy SEC and FINRA to say that the folks who appear on Money Matters are not endorsed by LPL Financial or FRS Financial, because that's what we're told we're not allowed to do, is endorse folks. But Dave, I'm glad you're here anyway, because, well, you're my insurance guy. So,
yeah.
So it's nice of you to come on in.
Absolutely.
Now, Dave, there's a little bit of stuff really going on in the insurance world these days, in that property casual side of life. So I'm gonna start today, and I'll probably just walk out right after this, because I know you've got an hour's worth of this left, with really one of my favorite lines from an all-time terrific movie of Blazing Saddles, and that's, what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Oh, that's a great question, and I noticed your Freudian slip, property and casual. There's not much casual going on in the property and casualty world of insurance. It is a generational hard market. If you do a little Google search, you'll find multiple articles with that title, or at least that topic in it. Nobody virtually in the insurance industry today has ever seen an insurance market that is this hard. And by hard market, that just means that competition is not fierce. There's not much competition, which means rates are going up. Coverage is difficult to find, hard to find, sometimes almost impossible to find. And that creates a hard market.
Yeah, and there are actually a lot of different working parts to that, right? It's we can almost call it a perfect storm, if you will, of all the things we've seen economically, really, in the last several years. Combining all of that with some of the actual storms we have seen go through, whether that's Colorado, whether we're talking about things that have hit even in places like Florida, the wildfires that have happened the last few years in California, all of these things come together to really get us the insurance market we see today.
They do. And ordinarily, I would say storms in Florida and fires in California really don't have much, if any, impact on us here in Colorado. But that's not true in the current market. The storms we're seeing across the Midwest, when you see floods, when you see I even saw flooding in California in the last month where cars were being washed away. One of my own clients called and said, hey, our rental car washed away. What do we do with this situation? Yeah. So there's weather events happening across the country right now that are impacting us here in Colorado because of the hard market. And I thought I would start with some very basics, maybe.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to assume that everybody understands a level of insurance or not. So most of us learn about insurance when we're somewhere in our late teens, early 20s, and all of a sudden we have to get car insurance. And
mom and dad says, you owe me $50 a month.
right. And then we're like, well, I think I can get it for less. And, you know, then you start to shop. And then some people shop every 6 months or so. Some people don't shop for 3 to 5 years. And then some people, like, they get it and then they forget it and never shop again. And so you may or may not have gotten a lesson on what insurance actually does, what it's supposed to do, and what it can do. And sometimes that happens once you buy a house and mm-hmm. you hopefully sit down with an agent and they actually explain, here's your dwelling coverage, here's your personal property coverage, your liability coverage. And you kind of learn about all those things, what a deductible is, that kind of stuff.
And hopefully you're not learning about this the first time when you've got to go file a claim.
Absolutely. You want to get the right insurance in place before you have to file a claim, for sure. So we mostly learn about insurance from the consumer side, if we learn about it really much at all. And that's fine most of the time. But now in this hard market, it's good to go a little bit deeper. So when you shop for insurance and then you purchase insurance through one of those big name carriers, and they offer you an insurance policy for a certain price, we call it a premium that you pay, that insurance company takes all of those insurance risks. In the insurance world, we call your home is a risk. Your vehicle that you drive around is a risk that the insurance company is willing to take the risk of for a certain dollar amount. And then they get what's called reinsurance in order to pay large claims. They have to keep a certain amount of funds on liquid so that they can pay claims that come up immediately. But if a major storm comes through, they'll have a reinsurance carrier that that participates in that claim once it hits a certain level. And we want that because as consumers, we don't want our insurance company to pay out all of their reserves for a big hailstorm in June. And then when my house has a kitchen fire in July, they don't have any money left to pay for my claim. So we need the system to work as it works. However, this is where all of the storms in the Midwest, in the Southeast, in California, all of this actually impacts us, is in the realm of reinsurance. Insurance companies have had major, we call them CAT losses, which is short for catastrophe. When an insurance company experiences a CAT loss, that's when the reinsurance company has to participate. And the number and severity of CAT losses across the country have been far greater than the actuaries anticipated. An actuary is just
a guy crunching numbers.
They're guys and gals that crunch numbers. We put them in the basement and feed them food through a slot every once in a while, but they're not allowed to interact with the public. I actually know a few people that went to school and are studying actuarial science. So that's an interesting field if you're going into it. I don't mean to demean you in any way. You're much smarter than I am. But the world of reinsurance has become a difficult place for the insurance companies to find coverage. The reinsurance rates have gone up 30 to 80% in the last year, and that cost is being passed on to us. So this is one piece of that perfect storm that you mentioned. No pun intended with storm, I guess. The other piece of the perfect storm is coming out of COVID. During COVID, we had the shutdowns,
right?
Which means nobody's manufacturing anything, nobody's building anything.
Fewer drivers on the road, so fewer accidents.
Absolutely. And insurance companies actually did pretty well in 2020, especially on auto insurance. nobody had accidents because nobody's driving right. anywhere. So, and if you remember driving back then, man, it was kind of fun.
You're like the only guy on I-25 most days.
Heck yeah, man. It was a short commute to the office. And, you're sitting at a red light and there's nobody going the other way. You're like, what's going on? So those were fun times. And the insurance companies made a lot of money in 2020. In 2021, the story started to change.
Yes.
As people got on the road, suddenly the people that had been on the road and having fun with it now are getting irritated, I think, with the number of people that are on the road all at the same time.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dave. I've never made mention of that.
You've never experienced road rage, I'm sure. The incidents of road rage, you can go to YouTube and you find so many videos. I don't think that's just because more people have dash cams. I think there's really an increase in road raging that's happening out there. So that's one thing. Also, the technology that's in our vehicles keeps on increasing. There's electronics and things in places you would have never expected them to be before, in your side view mirrors, in your bumpers, in the side rails of your cars, proximity mm-hmm. sensors, all these things. So a bumper that might have cost you $500-$600 to replace 10 years ago, today it's going to be $2,500, $3,000 to replace that same bumper. So those costs have gone up, which that means when you're in an accident, the claim's going to be right. higher, which means it's going to cost more to insure that vehicle. And that's kind of where we're at. Technology-wise and auto insurance, accidents have gone up a lot. So we mostly saw the hard market starting in the realm of personal auto insurance going up a couple years ago. You probably experienced your rate go up 30% or more. And that was sort of the first inklings. In the last year, it's not been so much personal auto. Commercial auto, if you've got a commercial vehicle, you're seeing your rates go up.
Very much so.
Yeah, and that happened. That's more from the is litigious a pejorative word? I don't know.
I think we can use that.
But it's more has more to do with the legal aspects of things and lawsuits increasing and payouts increasing on that side. Which, you know, if you're driving commercially, you're on the road all the time, and so it's tough on that front. But we're also seeing property insurance both in the commercial realm as well as personal. So your home insurance, you're probably, if you've gotten a renewal recently, you've seen your rate go up about 50%. That's the average. Now, your rate might have gone up 20%. That's probably the low end. That used to be the high end a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
20% was like alarm bells for us. Now 20%, we're kind of breathing a sigh of relief. At least on the in our agency, right. We are. You may not be, obviously, because you have to pay
20%
that
20% on the insurance, and then the increase in property tax, and all yeah. of a sudden that monthly mortgage payment went. Oh wow, that ballooned really fast.
Yeah, yeah. If we have time, we could talk about escrows. That's a fun topic. Coming out of COVID, with all the shutdowns, you can't just turn the switch back on and all of a sudden be up. Back up to the production that you had,
right?
You've got a deficit that you got to make up for. You can't make up for that in a year or two. Yeah. I don't know how long it takes. I haven't looked into what the experts might say on that, but I'm guessing it's got to be at least 6-7 years before you're back up to production where it needs to be.
Yeah, I would expect that it really, really does and does take that long. In some places, the production may never come back because even in that COVID time frame, in order to maintain production, we had to go reevaluate how that production line looked. And instead of having people literally next to one another, we had to get that 6 feet of distancing in. So we had to revamp all those production lines. That cost hundreds of millions of dollars to do. And we're not going to go undo that anytime soon because it's not like we have extra hundreds of millions just sitting around somewhere. Now, there are some supply and demand issues as well at work when we're looking at the insurance world, because companies have some ability to adjust rates, but they've got a process to go through for that. And And they have ways of, shall we say, reducing the number of policies that they have on their books without fully pulling out from a state, because I know we've talked about that before, that there are certain rules around that. If a company pulls out and is not going to insure anymore in a state, in Colorado in particular, they've got several years to wait before they can come back.
It's 5 years before they can come back in.
So there's some supply and demand piece going on with those policies as well, right?
That's correct. Yeah, the all of those production issues and everything we've talked about so far, all that does is show how it increases the cost of claims and the payouts. Insurance companies don't have the ability to immediately reprice. So if they're seeing the bottom line increasing or decreasing, I should say, with their claims payouts, they can't just go and increase that top line premium. They have to file those rates with the Department of Insurance, and every state has their own Department of Insurance. So I'll just mention here in Colorado, our Department of Insurance seems to be fairly reasonable. They try to keep costs down. They're consumer minded, but they also understand that if an insurance company can't raise their rates and leaves the state, that's bad for the industry. So they're very aware of the need to raise rates in certain times, but they do make the insurance company jump through whatever hoops they need to prove we've got to increase the rates here, or we want to offer a discount for this. They have to be able to go back to those actuaries that we demeaned earlier and get good numbers to that say, this is a reasonable increase before they can do that.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different pieces in there as well, right? Because when you're looking at in particular, if we're talking like that homeowner's sort of a policy in there, there are going to be different ways that those get priced. And it's, you know, at one point in time it was by zip code, but now they can even get it to the spot where it's kind of by neighborhood and even by street, depending on, you know, what they see. Again, coming back to our friends, the actuaries, the guys who know all the numbers and take good care of us with them, they're going to be able to say, you know what, this street sees X amount more hail more often than street Y that's two blocks away. So they can price things that way now, right?
Yeah. You could be in a neighborhood, especially a newly built neighborhood, might be on the edge of a wildfire area. Well, the homes on one side of the street back up to that open space, which is beautiful. You got great views. They may be uninsurable by some companies, but the homes across the street are insurable just because of the proximity to that wildfire risk.
Defensible space and all of those fun pieces that go along with that.
Yep.
And it's actually sort of a similar thing, too, when we're looking at pricing on vehicle policies. Because certain vehicles are more likely to be stolen. Certain vehicles are going to be more expensive to fix. Not that, you know, it would be cheap to fix something that went wrong on, say, a Tesla, but it's probably going to be a little bit more expensive to insure a Tesla than, you know, a 1987 Ford Escort.
It is, although once you get relatively old, those parts are hard to find.
Yes.
So it depends what kind of insurance you're looking to get. And how rare that vehicle was to begin with. But definitely parts on vehicles, we were seeing, due to those supply chain issues, we were seeing claims just to repair damage was taking 6 to 12 months in some cases for different vehicles. You couldn't find parts. There was the situation where new vehicles actually cost less than used vehicles because of the whole chip deal.
Yes,
it was people wanted the used vehicles because they were up and running, and the new vehicles, you were going to have to wait 18 months to get a computer chip for all the features that you wanted in your new vehicle. So it was a weird market, and that all of those things are starting to finally roll downhill and hit the insurance world.
It's interesting because when you look at auto insurance, a lot of people trying to, you know, do side hustles, you know, like Uber and Lyft and those things. But that can really greatly affect your insurance these days, too. And a lot of people don't understand that they have to have this special insurance, right, with their auto policy.
Absolutely.
When it comes to those services.
Absolutely. And same with your home. We call them the gig. It's the gig economy, right? And if you're using your home or your vehicle for business purposes, you definitely want to disclose that to your insurance company or your insurance agent to make sure that you have the right coverage. Uber has a coverage, which can make a lot of people feel comfortable, but there are gaps in how their coverage works that you need to fill with your own personal policy. And it's not automatic. It does cost a little extra. It's not much, but if you find yourself without that coverage, and then there's a claim and they find out, oh, you were renting out this room of your home.
Right.
We're not going to cover your home.
Right.
And that's a bad situation.
What
to be
about
in.
Renter's insurance? And if you have a side business and you have renter's insurance, does that affect that too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. And some insurance companies, you can add coverage onto a renter's or a homeowner's policy for certain business exposures. It just depends what you're doing.
A lot of good pieces, and you know, I promise we will come back to get a little bit more in depth in those pieces along the way. But Dave, I'm going to ask you the question that I always get asked in the investment world.
Yeah.
Right. Because are we at the bottom? Right. Is this the bottom? Have we hit the hardest part in that insurance policy world these days? Out of that hard market, are we at the bottom, getting close to the bottom? Are we maybe back on the way up a little bit if you think about it from, you know, the different places? Because I know there are particular companies that pulled out of California and we're no longer offering policies, and pulled out of Florida, we're no longer going to offer policies. Are we still seeing insurance companies pull out of states, or are we starting to see some new ones come in and maybe open that competition up a little more?
That's a great question, and I know you and I share a crystal ball, and last time I lent it to you, you lost it. So
it's in the shop, you know. Dave. It's in the shop.
But what we can do, and I'm sure you do this in the investment world, is you look for signs of what's going on and then put those into play and sort of make your prognostication from there. There are some signs that we have hit the bottom, or we're at least close to it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen any signs that we're truly on our way back up quite yet. But if we're at the bottom, then there's nowhere else to go but
right.
up, right? One of those signs recently came to my attention is that Geico. So Geico and State Farm. I think I can mention their names
because
they're national companies, and this is public information. So I'm not sharing anything private here. But Geico was one of the first companies to respond to the hard market, meaning that they started to slow down their production. Mm-hmm. They started to increase their rates. They started to kind of put the brakes on early on. State Farm, on the other hand, did not. Respond that way. And so 2 years ago, State Farm posted losses of $13 billion. They're a big company. So I know that sounds like a big number. I don't know that that's a big number for them, but it's still losses.
Right.
And then last year, they posted $14 billion in losses. So so that's the result of a company that didn't respond to the hard market. Geico, on the other hand, was one of the early responders. They actually posted a $5 billion gain last year, profit. So that's a good sign when you see that disparity between a company that responded early and a company that responded later, and some would say still hasn't quite responded.
Yeah.
And maybe State Farm's big enough they can keep on buying up market and absorb those losses. But so I'm saying nothing about the viability of Geico or State Farm in these statements, but just the results of those decisions. Now that we're seeing those results come out, other companies who either responded soon after Geico did might start to feel comfortable stepping back into the market in a little bit. So far, I have not personally in our agency, we haven't experienced that happening with any of our carriers quite yet. But we'll see what happens in the next quarter.
Yeah, so it really is one of those things, and works just like it does in my world, right? Where if you see everybody losing money, we're still headed all together in a bad direction.
True.
But if some have started to make that turn back up, okay, we're somewhere towards the bottom of that U.
Right.
We might not be at the bottom. There might still be a little to go. Or, you know what? We may have passed the bottom of it 6 weeks ago, and we just don't know it yet.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Absolutely. Well, folks, we are up against that break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to get a little bit more, maybe more personal in there with what goes on in those homeowner policies and, you know, some wind and hail claims. And Dave, we're going to look at your favorite term, full coverage.
Yes.
So, folks, stick around. We will be right back.
Are you worried about what's been going on in the markets and how it has affected your portfolio? Maybe you need a financial checkup. If you have questions about the health of your financial future, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary checkup. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break here on Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group, right here on KRDO. Rick Stevens with you in studio with Dan Cashel, with Dave Brekeva from Bruckhaus Insurance. And Dave, I want to get this one started off a little bit with that homeowner's policy. And
right.
There are a couple of different pieces in there, because I want to talk about the policies themselves. But I also want to talk about that pocketbook feel that many mm-hmm. of us have seen, especially after we got our new tax increase letters last year. There are also those of us that have that mortgage that are paying into escrow have seen that have to go up, not just for the taxes, for the property taxes, but also for our homeowners insurance.
Yeah, that's right. We get calls about escrow going up quite a bit because we are usually the biggest driver of that. This year, at least in our area, it seems taxes is joining
you
us.
You guys are secondary in this
yeah.
one.
and what people often don't understand is, well, my insurance went up this amount, but they're raising my rate or they're raising my mortgage twice that. Well, the issue is your mortgage company collects up front for your taxes and insurance. So they collected over the past year what they expected to pay this year for your insurance and taxes. When they get those bills and they're twice as much, they have to go back and obtain that funds that they didn't collect from last year, as well as increase for the following year that they're expecting to pay that increased amount as well. So you really get hit twice when there's an escrow at play, and that's just how they have to collect.
Yeah, because they've got to pay that bill for you because that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But they're not actually paying the bill for you. They're just kind of loaning you the money that you didn't pay them to begin with.
Right, right.
So kind of back to the policies themselves. One of those questions that I get asked often, and I'm sure you probably get it as well, how often do I need to look at my homeowner's policy to make sure that I've got the right kinds of coverages?
Yes.
Is the answer yes? The,
in our market.
Or is it Evan's answer of it depends?
maybe a little of both, but in the current market that we just got done describing, I would say the answer is yes. This year, above all other years, you need to look at your reconstruction cost estimate on your home. It's also called dwelling coverage or coverage A if you're reading your policy, which, by the way, I had somebody call me and said she read all of her insurance policies when they were delivered.
She must have had some sleepless nights.
And then she said, I think I understood about 90% of it.
Wow.
I was like,
offer a job?
You need to come in here and start working. That was something I have not heard. I ask other insurance agents when the last time is they've read a policy. And you know, other than piecing through to find various things, verbiage and whatnot, reading through a policy is not something we do on a regular basis.
So we want to go back. We want to revisit some of that reconstruction
yes.
cost, because especially over the last you know, 5, 6, 7 years and what we've seen in the housing market, that absolutely is going to affect what it would cost if, you know, your home was a total loss in some sort of a catastrophic event. The last thing we want on there is, you know, maybe having $400,000 in our rebuild fund, if you will, and it costing $700,000 to rebuild the exact same house we just lost.
Yep. And that's the situation that you could find yourself in if you haven't looked at your reconstruction costs recently. Especially in the last couple of years, we've seen the housing market doing crazy things. Your reconstruction estimate's not really associated with your market value of your home. So if you think you can sell your home for $500,000, that doesn't mean your reconstruction estimate ought to be about $500,000. Sometimes those numbers cross each other and equal each other, but they're not associated. The reconstruction estimate is what it sounds like. It's the cost it would take to rebuild your house as it stands today. And based on the cost of materials and labor and your location, that may be higher or lower than your market value. And you could have a small little country cabin up in the woods that takes, you know, 5 hours to get materials to. That's going to be more expensive to build there than it would be to build it down here, even though it's tiny.
And we're also talking about maybe not only to replace the house, but everything in it as well.
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty important to keep in mind.
Yeah. And most of the other coverages are based on a percentage of that reconstruction estimate, but they're important to look at. There's a coverage for separate structures. You may not have any separate structures. Some companies will let you delete that amount. Some companies will actually let you roll that amount into your dwelling coverage. Some companies, it's just standard on the policy, so whether you have it or not, you get it.
So a separate structure would be like a mother-in-law house or something like that?
Mother-in-law house, detached garage, a shed, a barn, all of those things, yeah.
Okay.
And so depending on what you've got, you may need to increase the coverage for those separate structures.
But the bottom line is to make sure that you know what you're covered for, right?
Yeah.
So if you're underinsured, you better find out before the actual event happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
And speaking of underinsured, let's just hypothetically, Dave, say there's a guy who has a baseball card collection.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be a few cards in there that are fairly valuable. And by valuable, I mean if you went to go bid on them on eBay, it would cost you a couple of $1,000s per card.
Hmm.
Is that the kind of thing you want a separate, what they might call, rider on your policy for?
There's a couple of ways you can get coverage for that. You can put it on your homeowner's policy in most cases. You'd need a receipt or an appraisal within the last 3 years for most of our carriers, which I think is a good idea if you haven't had that done recently. Get an appraisal because it may have been a couple $1,000s 3 years ago, and today it's more than that.
Yeah.
So you'd want to know that and get you'd want to get the right amount of coverage. Another way you can go with that is there's what's called a personal articles floater. It's not on your homeowner's policy. It's a separate policy. And if you've got enough personal property that you need scheduled, I would recommend going that way because if there's a loss on that, it doesn't come up in your clue history as a claim on your homeowner's policy. It's totally separate, and it won't increase your homeowner's rates down in the future.
Do you find that people often forget to add like the baseball card collection or jewelry or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
And they just assume that because it's in the house, it's all covered.
Yeah. And it is.
Yeah.
What did you pay for that baseball card?
Considering 13? Most of them were from the 80s, probably paid 50 cents for the pack of 20.
So they would do 50 cents.
So that's what you'll get.
What about what if they show a picture? I mean, it has to be certified, right? So we're talking valuable things have to actually, have to show why it's so valuable, correct?
Yeah. And most of the time we have to send photos and either the receipt or the appraisal to an underwriter for approval on that.
Okay.
Now sticking with the homeowner's side of things, I know we've had this discussion on a few other shows, I believe, in the past, but it's always one of those things that I think folks have a hard time grasping, and that's what I would call a tree fell on my fence. sort of a question. Whether it was my tree fell on the neighbor's fence, the neighbor's tree knocked out the shared fence we have, a neighbor's tree was hanging over my driveway and the limb fell on my car. What in the world do we do with that situation? Because I feel like that probably comes up a lot.
It does come up relatively often. Usually if a tree falls, it is not considered a liability unless you were unless it's on your property and you were aware that the tree was somehow damaged or diseased or something like that. So,
or you knew it was an old tree and we were about to get 2 feet of snow.
Sure, sure. So what I would recommend is if you see your neighbor's tree that looks sketchy, I would approach your neighbor. Hopefully you have a good relationship with your neighbors. I would approach your neighbor and say, hey, this tree looks like it needs some work or needs to come down, whatever. To get it taken care of. That conversation isn't enough to prove that they were aware of it. If they don't do anything, I would send a certified letter to them saying, hey, be aware this tree is a danger. And that way you can come back later and say they knew that this was damaged.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of keeping a little bit in that damage world, if we will, still staying on that homeowner side. On the Front Range, we get some wind and hail at times. And last year, we had some hailstorms that kind of came through over the summer. How long do we actually have to be able to file that claim from a previous storm?
That's a great question, and you better check your policy or with your agent or with your company that you're insured with to know for sure. It used to be fairly standard that you had 12 months to file the claim. You didn't have to get it repaired within 12 months, but there are companies that have reduced that to 6 months. So if you're with a company that has reduced it to 6 months, you know, and you file it late, you may not be able to get coverage for that event.
I've often been interested in finding out if you did file, though, right, and another event happened. What happens then?
Well, there's a lot of ifs in there.
Okay.
You filed a claim and before you get the repair, another event comes through. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about filing another one because you're about to replace it. But we've had this happen in our area, you know, you file a claim, you get the new roof on and 2 weeks later, another hailstorm comes through and wipes it out.
Right.
It is a second claim.
It's a second.
Yeah.
And there possibly could be third and fourth claims.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to file the claim, but I don't want to get the repair done until we get through hail season. You know, you got to make that decision, call for yourself. If your roof's not leaking, if you're not worried about continuing ongoing damage, because you would be liable for that. You know, if the roof wasn't leaking when you filed the claim and then you let it go another 4 months and then you're going to get the repair and now it's leaking, you may not be able to get coverage that extra damage. Yeah. We are all in our insurance policies. We are responsible to mitigate against future damage.
Okay.
If there's a hole in your roof from that tree that fell on your home, you can't just leave the tree there hoping that it wipes out the old TV you had so you can get a new one. You're responsible to mitigate against continuing ongoing damage.
And when we're looking at that roof, we've got that wind damage or that hail damage. We also want to be very aware inside of that policy how that's actually getting handled by the company, right? Whether there's the replacement value versus the ACV, which is the actual cash value of the roof. We need to know about our deductibles because there are umpteen different types of ways that deductible can be figured out.
Yeah.
Those are things we really need to pay close attention to, aren't they?
Absolutely. And these days, even though I just advised that you should be looking at your replacement cost and making sure that you have that coverage correct, if you move your insurance and you've had your policy for a while, it's likely that you've got a low deductible that you're not going to be able to duplicate in a new policy these days. Most companies are increasing their wind hail deductibles. So you have to watch for that. You might think, hey, I'm going to save $100. Well, hopefully you're not going to switch just for $100, but if you're not saving enough money to overcome that difference in deductible, you need to factor that into your decision. The difference between actual cash value and replacement cost is different than your deductible. Obviously, replacement cost is what it sounds like. The insurance company is going to replace what had been there. Actual cash value is depreciated. So that means if you've got a 30-year roof and it's 20 years old, you're going to get 2/3 of the value, or 1/3, because that's what was remaining on that policy, is all you're going to get paid out. So you do have to watch that. Also, with some companies now, they are limiting the age of roofs. So you might have a 9-year-old roof, and your particular company that you're going with has a policy that when your roof becomes 10 years old, it flips from replacement cost to actual cash value. That's built into the policy in some cases, and you may not get another notice from that company to make you aware of that. So you have to look for those things and make sure you're aware.
Yeah.
And one of those other pieces, Dave, you talked about it here a little bit, the dollar value deductible versus the percentage deductible. Mm-hmm. We need to know what that percentage is of, right? Because you might have a 3% deductible or a 5% deductible, but it's 3 or 5% of what,
right,
is the question.
And I've had people call and say, oh, I can handle 5% of the claim. That is not what it's calculated off of. It's calculated off of your coverage A, which is another reason to make sure your reconstruction cost estimate is accurate. If your coverage A is $800,000, but you really only needed $600,000, you just added, if you have a 1% deductible, you just added a couple thousand dollars to your deductible that you didn't need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really being able to get in there and understand those pieces as they're relating to that homeowner's side. I want to jump a little bit to the auto insurance side, because we've got about 15 minutes left here. And I know that we've been part of different forums before, mm-hmm. and every insurance agent's favorite phrase,
yes,
full coverage.
Yeah, what is full coverage?
Can I get full coverage on my car, Dave? Can I get full coverage? What's the price for full coverage? And I always love it, because the answer is, well, what's full coverage?
Exactly. There is no term in the P&C insurance world called full coverage. Different people think of different things with that. Usually it's that you have comprehensive and collision coverage, which is physical damage coverage to your vehicle. But there's other coverages that sometimes people would include with full coverage, because if the insurance company offers it and you didn't put it on your policy, then you didn't fully cover your vehicle,
right? Mm-hmm.
According to that company. So things like towing or glass coverage or rental reimbursement.
Yeah, rental. Yeah.
Yeah. And some companies actually will have, if you buy a brand new vehicle, you can get replacement cost, which is not usually available on an auto policy, but you can get new car or newer car replacement mm-hmm. coverage. So all of those things could potentially be rolled into full coverage. On the other side of it, sometimes full coverage, does that have something to do with your liability limits? You can have the state minimum liability limits, is that, and then have comp and collision, is that full coverage? Because you didn't have all of the liability that you could have had on that policy.
What's interesting, I was in Rangeley, my son was in college there, and I hit an elk.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
And it totaled the car.
Oh, yeah.
And
I totaled the
those
elk,
are,
Dan.
It totaled
those
the
are
elk.
Big okay. animals.
Yeah. Totaled the elk.
What kind of car?
It was a Dodge Durango.
Okay.
We didn't have
a respectable matchup.
So we had to tow it back from Rangeley, and that means, I mean, it's over by Utah and Wyoming border.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
And I called my agent. I'm like, do we have towing? And she said no. And I said, well, do we have? Can we get a car? You know? And she goes, you told us no. So when we have, you know, when it's being fixed, we could have used that coverage to actually have a vehicle to drive, but we didn't. Mm-hmm. We unchecked that box with that car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's important.
Yeah. And a lot of times if a family has an extra car, that's a way to save money. You don't need a rental because you've got an extra car. Don't worry about it. Or you can do without a car for a couple of weeks or whatever and make do. Then save some money.
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah, and as a dad with a lot of daughters, I will say this. We have added the extra roadside coverage to our policies because dad's not always going to be able to stop wherever he's at and come over and get wherever we are we need that roadside assistance on there. And it's not always something that's standard. It is one of those other boxes to be able to check.
Yeah. It's a little checkbox, and towing coverage in particular is not expensive on your auto policy. But it's a checkbox that sometimes doesn't get checked.
Yep. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, here in that auto policy world. It is probably not going to come as a shock to any of the listeners out there. The glass coverage is probably a good idea. I cannot tell you in from the time I was 16 until we moved out here in 2007. So I'm in my early 30s at that point. How few times I'd ever actually had a cracked windshield. I mean, I even lived in the country on a gravel road and didn't have cracked windshields.
Yeah. Well, nobody lived on the gravel road with you.
Right? I know, but it's 17 years out here. I think I've had to replace four.
Yeah.
Sure. So having that glass coverage, especially out here, is typically a good thing.
Especially at the rain sensor, windshield. Yeah. I mean, those are some expensive units.
There's windshields. $1,800 is not unheard of for a windshield. That goes back to our earlier conversation about the cost of goods and everything increasing the cost of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that glass coverage can be expensive depending on the vehicle that you're purchasing, because insurance companies and their actuaries know what that costs.
So what you're telling me is a Jeep windshield that has that reputation of being broken every 3 weeks versus some of the other vehicles that aren't so straight up and down, there's a little difference in the cost.
Yeah, it might cost a little more for the coverage, but I don't think those windshields are that expensive. So that brings the cost down. Whereas if you've got a BMW with, heads-up display in your windshield the rain sensors and everything else, you're probably going to be paying more than I paid for my first car.
That's true.
Glass.
So true.
Very much. So kind of sticking into that auto world, but bringing that gig economy discussion back in.
Sure.
You talked a little bit earlier about Uber, and, we threw in the Lyft and DoorDash and Grubhub and Turo and all that kind of stuff. So some of those companies have policies that cover you a portion of the time,
right?
But not all the time,
right?
So how would somebody who is, taking part in that gig economy really look to make sure they're properly insured at all times?
You definitely want to have a conversation with your insurance company or your agent to make sure that what you're doing has the appropriate coverage on your policy. The situation is, If you don't have your app turned on for one of these things, your personal policy is going to cover you. You're fine. As soon as you turn on the app, your personal policy essentially turns off. And I haven't read everybody's policies, but I've read Uber's years back. Their policy doesn't turn on just because your app is on. Their policy turns on once you accept a fare. So now you're driving from wherever you were sitting to go pick up your fare. Now Uber's covering you. But while you're driving around or sitting in one spot with your app on, Uber's not covering you and your personal policy's not covering you. So that's what we are trying to fill that gap for.
And you can't, if your car breaks down, you can't borrow your friend's car or your son or daughter or whatever's car.
Right.
It has to be the same car that's on the policy, right?
It has to be the one on your policy, correct? And I don't think you can switch your Ubering to a different vehicle.
Right, because that's a big no-no.
They approve the vehicle that they approve, and you can't just swap it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of different pieces through there. When we're looking at whether it's a homeowner's issue that has come up, whether it's something with a car, you know, whether it's, you know, we're getting a new windshield or we've been in an accident. I know that there are certain companies that insurance companies, I guess I would say, start with, right? So with my policy, if I've got a glass claim, I go in, I make that claim online, they immediately automatically refer me to company X, but it's my car, right? I get the opportunity to say, I would rather have company Y replace that glass, right?
Yep.
I don't always have to go with who the insurance company says, these guys to put the roof on the house, those guys to fix your garage door, these guys to rebuild it, these guys to do the repairs on the car. I actually get to make that choice, right?
Absolutely. And I always advise if one of our clients knows that they want to use a certain vendor, make sure that they know that when they call in the claim. Because otherwise, as soon as you hit 4 for glass claim, it's going to head you right over to the contracted glass company that the insurance company uses. It'll still do that even if you know the company, but then you can tell them, no, I'm using this other company. They're already scheduled to come out on whatever date. Same thing with your roof claims, with your body damage claims on your vehicle, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Well, in the last couple minutes here, Dave, I want to kind of pick a little bit on the business and commercial coverage side of things, because a lot of times people don't think about insurance that a business would need to have, or maybe they're only thinking about, well, it's just on their vehicles, or it's just on the contents of what's sitting in their office. There are actually a variety of types of coverage that a business may want to look into and consider, right?
Absolutely. And this can get kind of complex and confusing depending on the kind of business you've got. Obviously, if you're doing something where you're in an office and everything that you transact is right in that same office, that's fairly simple. But as soon as you purchase a vehicle for that business and now you're delivering things or you're picking up people and moving things around, it gets a little more complicated. A lot of times we talk about, or I'll have to educate folks on inland marine coverage. You know, you've got your, say you've got a landscaping company, so you've got your truck insured and you've got, maybe you've got your trailer insured. And so therefore you assume that all your tools and equipment are all insured because they're in the trailer or in the truck. That is not the case. They're not covered by your vehicle policy or by that trailer being added. You have to have tools coverage or an inland marine policy. Inland marine is just a very old term, but it means business property that moves around. It doesn't sit in one spot.
So it's not like my jet ski. That's not inland marine?
No.
Okay. Checking in on that.
Yeah.
You can take it in an inland marine port, I guess.
Also along those lines, businesses can actually buy data breach insurance as well, because we see it all the time these days of, you know, information that somehow got leaked out. We can insure against that.
Right. Yeah, we've all heard of the cyber attacks and things like that happen at Home Depot, and I think Target had one years back. And
I think
that,
like,
stuff.
Genworth, large life insurance company, so recently had one.
And we can name those big names and think, well, then we're safe because we're not big like them. But these attackers are going at, they often go after smaller businesses because you don't have the protection. You don't have, you know, some of the firewalls in place and those kind of things. So you're an easier target. And depending on what kind of data you're keeping of your clients, you might be responsible for their personally identifiable information, PII. Mm-hmm. And you, if you're held liable for that, that can put you out of business if you don't have coverage. You might not be holding on to client data, but you might be dependent absolutely on your computers. And then they hack in and lock up your computer and you can't get to what you need to get to.
And send us 3 Bitcoins business to unlock this.
Yeah.
All those crazy pieces out there. Well, as we come into sort of wrapping up today's show, Dave, is there anything that maybe we didn't exactly get to that you're saying, hey, listeners out there, this is something to be fully aware of at all times?
Yeah, I would say the important thing this year is do the things that you can do to reduce your insurance costs. you know, obviously drive safe. If you don't get in accidents, then you're not going to have your rates go up because of accidents. If you're careful about certain things, look at safety issues that you might see around your house. You know, if somebody trips and falls, that could be a lawsuit. Yeah, take care of those things that are easy for us to take care of as homeowners, as drivers, business owners. You know, put safety protocols in place for your business, things like that. Do what you can do to reduce the exposure to certain risks, and that can help you reduce your costs. Look at things like increasing your deductible if you haven't looked for a while. Look at your home reconstruction estimate. Make sure that's dialed in. Do some of these things now so that you're prepared and that you're reducing your costs for the future. When more insurance companies start to come back online, as we see competition improve in the next year or two, you'll be in a better position in that regard. Also, be careful about filing claims. I will never tell somebody don't file a claim because that's unethical for me to do. But I will say there are some claims that you probably ought not file. I had somebody looking for home insurance, and they had two claims. One was a zero payout. That shouldn't have been filed. The other one was a $1,000 payout. That probably shouldn't have been filed either. That makes them uninsurable with many companies. And you can avoid those things.
Awesome. Well, Dave, if folks have questions, how do they get in touch with you guys over at Bruckhaus?
Yeah, the best way is to give us a call at 719-258-8071. You can go to our website at www.bruckhaus.com, and that's spelled B-R-U-K-H-O-U-S-E. I've got blogs up there with a lot of the information that we've talked about, so you can find things that way. And you can email me at david@bruckhaus.com.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, Dave, thank you for joining us this week. Very informative, as always. Folks, that is all the time that we have on Money Matters this week. If you do have those questions, feel free to reach out to Dave, reach out to the folks over at Bruckhaus. If you didn't catch those numbers, you can always reach out to me. I can get you in touch over there. Folks, we will be back next week. That's all the time this week, but we will be back next week, and we'll be continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.